You're listening to a podcast from 702 and Cape Talk.
6 minutes after 10. Thank you so much for staying with us and welcome to the second hour of today's show. And as promised, we are in conversation with the public protector, Advocate Busisiwe Mgwebane. And you're more than welcome to take part in this conversation. It will be quite wide ranging. We thought we'd get the public protector in, have a sit down, and we're grateful. We know she's exceptionally busy. And just understand who she is. And obviously also, fortuitously, it's just by coincidence, we've been wanting her on for a while. But after yesterday's news, we'd also obviously drill into some of the issues that came out of the press conference. But over and above that, who is she? How does she see her role? What is her background? Some of you know her, many of you don't, and also treat the public protector like an enigma. So hopefully we can actually get behind some of that enigmatic reporting, tweets on social media and on Facebook. So it's going to be a wide-ranging conversation. You're more than welcome to tell me what your questions are. You can call in as well. On 011-883-0702 and in Cape Town on 021-446-0567. And remember, you can tweet me your thoughts, your questions as you hear the conversation at 702, at Cape Talk, or at Eusebius. I think the other easy way maybe to also pick up the conversation is to use a hashtag. So just use hashtag 702 Public Protector. And then we will just search that for questions. Hashtag 702 Public Protector. That should challenge those of you who are wordy, because that's going to take up a lot of your character. So keep your questions and comments pithy. Hashtag 702 Public Protector. And then I'll pick those up as well. Public Protector, thank you so much for coming in. It's wonderful to see you.
Good morning, Eusebius, and good morning to your listeners.
I feel very underdressed here. I usually come in T-shirts to the studio, okay. So I thought I'd wear a shirt this morning, and despite that, I still feel like I'm underdressed next to you, dressed to the nines. Thanks for coming in.
Okay, thank you so much.
Firstly, people forget that despite these positions that politicians, public servants have, you are human beings first and foremost. You come under a lot of flack. I've just looked at how social media responded yesterday to some of your remarks. How are you feeling?
Waking up. I'm fine. I'm highly favored. I'm fine. I'm peaceful. I'm just doing my work.
How do you deal with the pressure, the relentless scrutiny, and the fact that the public is divided about you? Many do come to your defense, think that you need to be given a chance, which is fair, to do your job properly, judge you on your record. Others are suspicious and say all sorts of things about you. I mean, what is your coping mechanism, or do you just get on with it?
The way I cope, as I said, that I'm highly favored. I'm a Christian. I pray a lot, and I think God is giving me this strength to go on, and I'm there to serve the people. I think I know I won't be pleasing everyone, and I'm just trying to do my job.
And maybe a good starting point is for people to understand what your background is coming into this particular job, because people don't really know you. They sort of know, like, oh, was she a spy? Does she have an intelligence background? But you've got a longer background than that. You are an advocate, first and foremost. Yes. Where did you study, and where did your law career start?
Yeah, I studied at the University of the North. Now it's called University of Limpopo. Studied BProc, LLB. Then started working as a prosecutor, worked a long time as a prosecutor. Thereafter moved to international relations, dealing with your extradition matters, issues of mutual legal assistance. Then moved to the Human Rights Commission, where I was a senior researcher on South Africa's responsibility to comply to the international conventions, and moved to the Public Protector. I worked there as a senior researcher and as the acting head of the Gauteng. I established the Gauteng office.
Okay.
Then moved to Home Affairs.
Did you whisper into Malusi's ears to give naturalization, right? Or did you not overlap? No, you went Home Affairs. You left in 2005, didn't you?
I left in 2005 to Home Affairs. Yes, I worked as a director of Refugee Affairs then, so I was responsible for the refugees, the whole country. And I would like to say today is World Refugee Day, and let's give commemorate that day with the UNHCR. I know they are busy on that. So I worked at Home Affairs, and then until I was deployed to China, Remember at Home Affairs I did the refugee law, international refugee law. Then I moved to China where I was specifically dealing with immigration law, facilitating visas and permits for Chinese nationals who are visiting South Africa and supporting Department of International Relations in the mandate which they had there. So I only moved to state security in July, and I was there for 3 months.
Is that all?
Is that all? So
you've had a very long career in the state as a public servant.
Yes.
A couple of seconds with state security.
Yes.
But there's this like, there's almost like some people's, if you had to do a word cloud above your name, some people think you've been like a spook for the last 80 years.
I know, but the thing is I worked for Home Affairs for ages. I mean, if you can Google my name, you'll see that I've been with Home Affairs for a long time, especially in the refugee environment. I worked a lot there, and there were a lot of challenges. There are still challenges as far as that is concerned. So with state security, it was only for 3 months, and I'm glad that I worked there as well to understand the perspective and what the state security is all about. Mm. Remember, they are there to protect the security of the state, which state is the people, the sovereignty. You know, it's not only to say people who are working there. It's not spies, because spies, they don't come out in the open, and you don't work, you know, openly to say I'm working in the embassy, I'm the consular immigration, and you are deployed as a spy. It doesn't work like that. You know?
Okay, and now you are public protector. I think it's a good thing that this institution has become so well loved by South Africans, because all Chapter 9 institutions need to provide a very important oversight role. I wonder if you can sketch for us, Advocate, at a sort of jurisprudential level, how you see the role and the place of the Office of the Public Protector in our democracy.
The Public Protector is there to strengthen constitutional democracy. We have this constitution, which is regarded as one of the best in the world, and we need to ask ourselves, are people enjoying the very same constitution or the very same democracy? So, in other words, the Public Protector is there to investigate maladministration in state affairs, to make sure that we don't have corruption, which is to the detriment of the South African. We also don't have legislative provisions which are there to stifle or which will make people not to enjoy the very same constitutional democracy. So the role of the Public Protector is actually to focus on systemic issues which are stifling that enjoyment of economic, in fact, of freedom. So it's both ways, whether it be political freedom and economic freedom. So I think the role is basically that. Mm. But again, to speak for the voiceless, you know, making sure that our services are there, available, free. People can approach us. But again, my vision is we also need to empower South Africans at the grassroots to know their rights, to be able to challenge government and say, you are not giving me the service I'm supposed to get. And if they cannot get any assistance there, approach the Public Protector. But the Public Protector should focus on those systemic issues because we see a lot of systemic challenges where you find that we receive a lot of complaints, especially from municipal level. And when you go there, it's about service delivery. Again, are we having the legislative provisions which makes it easy, you know, for people to access services and enjoy this democracy?
15 minutes after 9, let's take our first break. You've heard the Public Protector outline broadly where she sees the Public Protector's office fitting into our democracy. The systemic challenges in particular are crucial in making sure that we reduce the gap between the normative vision of the Constitution and our daily experiences. What are your questions for her? We're going to drill down into some of the issues, and perhaps the first question I will put to her on the other side of this break is why she is opposing what surely is a very good case that the president is bringing against her predecessor. 15 minutes after 10.
Eusebius is on Twitter at Eusebius.
19 minutes after 10, we're in conversation this hour with the Public Protector, Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane. Advocate Mkhwebane, I wonder whether the first substantive issue we can talk about is the president's review of the recommendation of your predecessor in terms of whether or not she had overstepped the bounds by recommending that there should be a full judicial of inquiry into state capture, and that the Chief Justice ought to appoint the relevant person with the judicial expertise, probably a retired judge, to be the one to head such a commission. Now, you have announced that you will, in fact, opposing that particular case. How did you reach that decision?
I indicated in February that I'll be taking a legal opinion on the matter, and as well checking the complexity of that investigation, because that investigation involves around six state-owned institutions, and it will require a lot of work to do that. So after the discussion with the legal team, then we came to a conclusion that one will oppose the judicial review. And you need to understand that it's not only the president, it's also Minister Zwane and Minister Van Rooyen who've lodged the application for judicial review. So the details of the reasoning will be in the affidavit, which we'll have to prepare. So the time is still not yet right for us to do that, because there's still processes which they are still being finalized to make sure that all the documents are lodged. But again, everyone has signed the confidentiality clause, so that we don't find ourselves having documents or confidential information being all over, but only be utilized for the court processes.
But what I found lacking yesterday in detail is that you had said evidence is still being gathered on the matter to finalize it.
No,
but if that is
the
case, how have you got legal certainty in terms of what your legal position already is?
No, evidence is there, Eusebius. Isn't it? The report is completed. The report is detailing in each state organ what needs to be investigated further. So the report is there. The report is complete. What I was saying is that the evidence which we're talking about is the evidence used to compile the report. Remember that in the application needs to be lodged. Well, there's Rule 53 where it was demanded that those records needs to be lodged. And again, you need to understand that I indicated about the new evidence or new allegations which are coming out after receiving the complaint from CASAC and from EFF regarding additional information which was not there in the original investigation.
But I want to get to the nub of the real substantive legal question, is whether the president and others joining his case are on solid ground or not. And it seems to me that on one reading, whatever you think of the president, that from a legal point of view, he's on solid ground. He has the exclusive constitutional prerogative to decide whether, and in terms of the mechanism, who should be headed, a judicial commission of inquiry.
No.
Surely, your opposing it doesn't have any legal grounds other than maybe, I don't know, girl power with Thuli Madonsela. Why are you opposing the president when the president's case seemed to be solid in law?
You know, that's why I'm saying to you, it's solid in law. It can be solid in law, but there are other technical issues which we will be raising. Can you just wait and so that we can respond in detail why we are opposing the judicial review?
Okay, you don't have to reveal those to me, but do you accept that on current law, a plain reading of the Constitution is that it is overreaching for your office, whether you or your predecessor, to direct the details of how to constitute a judicial commission to the president?
Yes, Eusebius, that is can be viewed like that.
Do you have that view as well?
Hence the matter. Yes, I do. But the matter is before court. And that's why we have the court to help us, you know, to interpret the law. So this matter is, we never had a situation where we find ourselves in this position. So it's fine. It can be that view. But at the end of the day, let's go and ventilate the issues in court.
But when you say you're opposing it, does that then mean that the grounds for opposing it are not the grounds that people think? I.e., you concede that the president is right. He's got the exclusive constitutional prerogatory power to decide who should head a commission of inquiry. If you ceding that legal ground to the president, what is the basis on which you are opposing?
Not really that I'm ceding that to the president. I acknowledge that indeed there is that legal provision in the Constitution, this being solely the mandate of the president. But then there are various issues which have been raised in the president's affidavit regarding this particular matter. Going further as well, that the public protector, yes, cannot delegate her powers to the commission of inquiry, but the private protector should be investigating those issues and coming up with the findings. So hence I'm saying that the reasoning why we, knowing that that is the provision and also wanting the court to pronounce or to interpret that particular provision. On the other hand, there are other additional issues regarding whether the private protector can go to that particular extent to have that judicial review matter, because it goes back to what people are saying now about the CX report or on whether the private protector can come up to the remedial actions which she has pronounced on.
But I'm a bit confused, public protector. I'll tell you why this fascinates me, because as a failed would-be lawyer, I pay attention to language. And when you say you're opposing, I wonder whether that means opposing as a matter of law or whether you're simply saying to the court, we are going to follow these proceedings as an interested party and we cannot wait to get constitutional clarity from you. That is a very different legal position to a legal position that says, I disagree with the president on the nexus issue of whether he has the exclusive prerogatory constitutional power. So which of those two strategies is it?
It's both. It's using both. Yes, would want to have a legal confirmation on whether the public protector can go to that particular extent. But then again, there is a legal basis to say, at the end of the day, I mean, the president, remember, raised the issue of conflict of interest or the issue of cannot be the judge and the, you know, a referee and a player in this particular matter, especially in the Gantla matter. So sometimes, again, now the president is coming out and saying, don't have a problem with the judicial review. So it will help us to have clarity on this matter.
Is the president inconsistent across those two viewpoints?
Yeah, because now he said he's not having any problem to have a judicial inquiry, though it's not possibly about the one in court, but a comprehensive investigation of all the issues relating to state capture. So, I mean, if you feel that that needs to be done, why now having challenges with this? But it will help to have the court interpret this for us. And
they will get there. I'm trying to understand your logic, because I think a lot of people don't understand your legal reasoning. But I think I'm beginning to understand what you're saying. Is this a useful summary of what you've just said? If in scenario A, the president says, I cannot be both the judge
and the jury,
but in scenario two, he says, I'd like to be the judge and the jury, that we have a legal problem.
Yes. So we need to clarify those issues and we need to know going forward, where can we, you know, which at what level can we stop as the public protector, and how can we go about to make sure that certain remedial actions, where do we draw the line, in fact, when that matter comes to light.
But given that he's the one who's centrally implicated in all the state capture narratives, on that particular case, if we take that as a self-standing case, forget about Nkandla, just for 30 seconds, do you think that as a matter of law, the president can reasonably say that I want to appoint the head of a judicial commission of inquiry investigating me in this state capture allegations?
Remember, I think we need to have confidence in our judiciary. And irrespective of whether he's implicated, my view is any judge he'll be appointing, that judge will be objective and that judge will do their work objectively. And remember, that judge would be having the powers which the public protector is having in conducting the judicial review. So my view is that I don't think it's a problem that he's also implicated. But I think that's why I'm saying to you, can we give this an opportunity that we go to ventilate all these issues? And we will have all the legal basis why we are opposing this particular matter.
Okay, so just a final question on this and then I'll leave it, I promise you. So you understand the president's demand that the Constitution be interpreted as giving him exclusive prerogatory power. Mm. You also told me in the last 3 minutes that you've got so much confidence, or one ought to, unless you have reason not to, in any judge being appointed, that it's very clear to me that whatever your legal arguments before the court will be in the affidavit, it presumably is not going to engage the president on that leg of his case.
It will engage the president on the issue of applying for a judicial, in fact, to oppose the judicial review, again, being prescriptive of who must do it. In this particular instance, and it will also dwell much on why the report should not be set, that remedial action should not be set aside and the report be taken back to the public protector.
Okay. 23 minutes before 11, we are in conversation with the public protector, and I want to move on to a different theme. Public Protector, I want to touch on this question around the role of the Reserve Bank. Now, you've come under lots of scrutiny for recommending that the Constitution should be amended to read as follows: the primary object of the Reserve Bank is to promote balanced and sustainable economic growth in the Republic while ensuring that socioeconomic well-being of the citizens is protected. And I've seen economists weighing in on this over the last 12 hours. I want to set aside the economic merits of the proposal. I want to talk to you firstly about law. What is the legal basis of your making this recommendation as public protector? Where in the Public Protector Act and or Chapter 9 that defines your role do you get the legal basis for making this recommendation?
The legal basis, Eusebius, is that in the investigation of the maladministration, the corruption, the undue delay and abuse of state resources, abuse of power, we need to report on those and we need to have remedial action. Our main basis is the redress to whoever we are dealing or we are assisting. And again, it's always checking what prejudice did the complainant or people who are impacted by that investigation suffered. So in this particular instance, we have several reports as an institution where our findings, the intention is to make sure that we have on numerous occasions in our reports where we have called for policy change, legislative changes. And I must hasten to say, if you read the report and you read the remedial action, it says the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Justice and Correctional Services must initiate a process that will result in the amendment of Section 224. Initiate the process. This is still a process, and I'm not saying these are the proposals. They can deliberate on that, and then they can decide, no, we are not amending, we are fine with the the way the constitutional provisions are. So this is saying initiate a process, because again, taking it to the committee is representing all South Africans. All political parties are represented there. People have their mandates, and their constituencies will be saying, this is our view on this particular matter. Therefore, that's the main intention.
But Advocate, I mean, whether you say initiate a process or whether you say, here's the exact wording that should be used to recraft a part of the Constitution, in both scenarios, you are going beyond what you are lawfully allowed to do. What part of the Public Protector Act or what part of Chapter 9 is permitting you as a matter of law, not as a citizen? We can debate this, you not wearing your hat as Public Protector. And there's a reasonable disagreement one can have about whether the proposal is good. That's why I'm saying set aside the merits of it. As Public Protector, what part of the various sources of law that are the, that is the basis of your authority is this recommendation to even initiate a discussion stemming from?
Stemming from the mandate of the Public Protector is to, as I'm saying, the remedial action. Take remedial action which will help in the issue of making sure that whoever are affected by this investigation are not prejudiced, are placed in a position they would have been better off in the circumstances. So the issue is the Constitution, the Public Protector Act, because the Constitution, our mandate is to investigate, to report on, and take remedial actions. So the remedial actions are saying, those remedial actions, how can they redress the prejudice which has been suffered by whoever is affected by this particular investigation?
But when the drafters of the Constitution gave you the entitlement to come up with remedial action, which we now know through very progressive case law means binding unless set aside upon review, it did not envisage that the remedial action will include you wanting to tell the legislators what kind of conversations about changing the Constitution to initiate. So you do have remedial action powers, and we are grateful that you do. But why do you think that remedial action power includes you telling the executive and the legislature what kind of changes to make to an institution as central to governance as a reserve bank? That is not what was envisaged by saying that you allowed to come up with remedial action.
I think that is for the court to decide what were the intention of the legislatures on that particular issue.
Yeah, but presumably you have a view that was the basis of this radical recommendation yesterday. So telling me the courts will decide is right, if it gets challenged, we'll go there.
Yes.
But in the meantime, why don't you tell me what the legal logic is for why you thought that this is consistent
is
with your powers?
The legal logic is to benefit the South Africans, to benefit the people who are being prejudiced by this particular judge, this particular behavior or this particular maladministration or conduct by both government and the Reserve Bank, being an organ of state and performing a public function, and as well being a constitutional institution.
Advocate, there are many things that will benefit the ordinary person on the street. Not everything that will benefit the ordinary person on the street is something that you, wearing your hat as Public Protector, has a lawful basis for saying this now becomes a binding Public Protector remedial action that I am requesting of the legislature to do.
Yeah.
So I still don't understand what part of the Public Protector Act or which particular clause in Chapter 9 justifies telling the executive and the legislature how they need to expand the role of an institution that falls outside your part of the state apparatus?
As I indicated, Eusebius, that I think the legal basis is the very same Constitution, Section 182 of the Constitution, which allows the Public Protector to take remedial action. So the Public Protector, in taking the remedial action and protecting the public, have taken that remedial action to make sure that the process is initiated. This matter is deliberated on, again, to say how can the South African public benefit in this particular instance.
The remedial action that the Constitution and the statute in terms of which you exist want you to come up with remedial actions as a matter of law are the ones that are consistent with the Constitution you've been granted.
Yes. Remember, again, the Public Protector has a social justice element in it. Being an ombudsman, we need to take as well social issues into consideration. Yes, here we would want to debate what law, what the provisions I'm relying on, which I've indicated what provision I've relied on. But then on the social aspect of things, this is what people are being impacted on, or this is what is prejudicing the public. So it's based on that particular aspect.
Yeah, but I mean, what you're doing here is going beyond what you're lawfully allowed to do. When it comes to questions of the socioeconomic rights, when it comes to macroeconomic policy, when it comes to monetary policy, when it comes to a debate about whether the Reserve Bank should restrict itself fundamentally, let's say, to inflation targeting, or whatever its goal should be and which instruments it should be, that entire conversation.
But nothing is stopping the Public Protector from investigating any conduct in state affairs and any legislative provision. Remember, the very same socio-economic rights are provided for in the Constitution. We've got various state institutions whose mandate is to make sure that those rights are being protected. And the Reserve Bank is a constitutional institution which is also performing a public function. What I'm saying is there's nothing stopping the Public Protector from investigating and pronouncing on that particular state organ or that state conduct.
But what you are doing here is encroaching on what should properly be a government decision about what the role of the Reserve Bank should be. How on earth are you going to yank out in court, should it come to that, even a vaguely coherent legal justification for why something so central to the hurly-burly of governments as the role of the Reserve Bank is something that you can casually, as a Chapter 9 institution, want to make fundamental changes to as a matter of the Constitution? I mean, that's just bizarre. What was the origin of this part of your recommendation?
Not bizarre. Remember, one of the issues we were investigating was whether the South African public was prejudiced by this particular conduct of the South African government, the very same South African government and the Reserve Bank, which we are investigating. So we pronounced based on that and what prejudice people might have suffered because of how the mandate of the South African Reserve Bank is crafted in this investigation. I think if you read the report, if we can just deliberate on the report and the content of the report, you'll understand what is the basis for us to take that particular aspect. And as I'm indicating to you, the focus was what prejudice did South Africans suffer by the very decision of spending so much money, which is supposed to be benefiting the South Africans, and out of that, giving this gift, which we can say it benefited a few individuals instead of benefiting everyone. So we need to redress that and put South African.
I reckon you seem to misunderstand here what I said. Maybe other people will challenge you on whether big bad banks have original apartheid sin. You're not going to find me as a lefty seriously or sincerely taking you up on that. Okay. The historical stuff about how APSA benefited, I'm totally with you. Mm-hmm. There's an awkward, unfinished conversation about how corporates that benefited from apartheid need to make amends. Mm-hmm. You and I are probably politically and philosophically on the same page. I'm asking you a narrow legal question here. When we talk about the kind of remedial action that your predecessor became synonymous with in trying to ensure that Gogo Dlamini on a daily basis experiences social justice. Mm. No one envisaged that you would be dictating to a government how to fundamentally change the constitution come up with a new role for the Reserve Bank. I mean, it's ludicrous, to be honest.
What is the role of the Public Protector? Are we not investigating the very same government? Are we not supposed to be strengthening the very same government? How do we strengthen constitutional democracy if we cannot identify these issues to them to say, deal with these issues because this is what it impacts on an ordinary South African. So the main aim is these are the issues which government is thinking everything is honky-dory, it's fine. But then we are saying everything is not fine because this is what you can go beyond and check and deliberate on and consider this, you know, initiate the process, deliberate on this. But then again, I don't want us to go deeper into legal issues because, yes, you'll feel, as I'm saying to you, the court is there to interpret the law. I've seen the Reserve Bank is intending to take this matter on judicial review. It will be interesting to deliberate on this matter and to get the court to pronounce on this particular issue.
The Reserve Bank has released a statement and it has said expressly that your amendment would, and I quote, if effected, strip the Reserve Bank of its key competency to protect the value of the currency and the well-understood role that the central banks play in securing price stability. It goes on and it says the Reserve Bank has consulted its legal team and has been advised that the remedial action prescribed by the public protector falls outside her powers and is unlawful. The Reserve Bank has been advised to bring urgent review proceedings to have the remedial action set aside.
It's fine. I think it's within their rights to do that. I don't think it's necessary for us to analyze whatever they said or what basis they are going to be using. It's for the court to decide whether I've overreached my mandate.
Okay, let's take a break there. John Clark, welcome to the show. Advocate, can I kindly ask you just to put on your headphones? Let's hear this question. Yes, John, now you can go ahead. Welcome.
Hi, hello, Eusebius. Good morning, Advocate Gavani. I've just spoken to your staff about my complaints, and I didn't want to, you know, kind of fight with you, but I lodged a complaint over 6 months ago against Advocate Sean Abrahams about his maladministration and alleged abuse of power in not using Billy Hoffmeyer to his full capacity. He's only doing a three-hour day job. And my concern isn't because of all the political and all that kind of ramification, but just the fact that it seems to me absurd that we should in our criminal justice system.
Okay, well, I think the lines there are not very great. But I suppose one of the things that it was hinting at, but I'm guessing here, is that if in part we can rely on other arms of state to obviously patch up areas where you might have resource and other constraints, why should we have faith in them if they've been hamstrung on other occasions? I think that's what John is getting at.
The complaint with which John lodged, we requested, in fact, that was the issue of saying to him, can you raise the matter first with the head of NPA, because he lodged the complaint that Advocate Hoffmeyer is not used to his full capacity. And then we requested that can he exhaust and engage the head of NPA first before approaching the public protector. So I think if there's nothing which is forthcoming from the head of NPA, I think he's welcome to come back and lodge a complaint. I think I know about this matter.
Okay, Vumani, very quickly, what's your question?
Oh, sorry, hi there. I'd just like to ask the public protector on her opinion in terms of how to deal with the technicalities of ABSA actually paying back that loan. I'm basing this question on Phyllis Devet's opinion piece in the Mail and Guardian, considering that to however limited extent we do have sort of black investors within ABSA and black businesses that have loans with ABSA, and sort of how do we deal with the fallout of possibly sort of ABSA paying back this loan and then divesting from South Africa?
Okay, good question, Advocate.
Vumani, I think those are the nitty-gritties where ABSA can agree with SIU, because we are saying SIU should recover those misappropriated funds. It doesn't mean that ABSA can say, here's the 1.1 billion, boom. The ABSA can find a way or a solution to say how we can do this in a staggered way, which was one of the suggestions, I think, in the Heath, the previous investigation by Judge Heath, though he decided not to pursue that route.
Okay, we've only got 2 minutes left, Advocate. I want to ask a question that's a clarificatory one. Obviously, there's the state capture report. There's a whole case around there being taken on judicial review. But there's also now there's emails and the Gupta leaks and lots of new evidence of state capture that has emerged and that has been lodged with you, a particular complaint. You have released a statement to the effect, as I understand it, that basically you will be doing the equivalent of a preliminary investigation. What does that mean from a process point of view?
The process point of view, in all our new complaints, Eusebius, we receive a complaint, we assess the complaint to determine whether it falls within our jurisdiction. And in this particular instance, the assessment has been done, and the assessment says these issues, they have been dealt with in the state of capture report. These issues are not there, therefore we will be investigating them. Preliminary investigation entails in a process point of view. Can Eusebius tell us, indeed, on this particular day, this is what you do, you did any documentation to that particular effect? Because sometimes some people lodge a complaint, not giving us detailed information as far as that is concerned. The one which was lodged by EFF, I must say that they have also given us documentation which will fast track the process on our side, because then we wouldn't be waiting for the people implicated to give us a response.
So why is it preliminary? Why don't you sift through the prima facie evidence and then decide whether to have a full investigation or not?
But the very same prima facie evidence will assist us to, in fact, the preliminary, to say which ones can we pursue and which ones, because remember again, when it comes to Transnet, for instance, you're raising the issue of the locomotives. Yes, Malusi Gigaba was not mentioned in the state of capture report, but then we'll have to check what link is there, what evidence we have in the state of capture report, which will assist us to conduct or to investigate further this particular information. I'm not saying the information which is there is not prima facie or not, but what I'm saying is let's apply our mind to it and make sure that we take the proper direction.
Okay. I'm going to give you a final minute. We're a little bit over time, but I'm sure news won't mind. We don't have you here very often. These are high-profile political cases. The public, commentators, analysts, the average Joe on the street, we have different views about what your priorities should be. If it was up to me, I would have a full investigation to the Guptas right now, top on your agenda. What for you is the most important thing, given your resources and your role in terms of the next couple of weeks and months?
For me, it's balancing the two, Eusebius. I mean, the reports we've issued, I indicated, they're dating back to 2011, 2010. Even Khosi Bob, I mean, had to die waiting for our report, which is a very painful thing for me to say. I feel I failed him also. I couldn't make sure that he knows what happens to the millions of Baboba Mogale. So for me, it's balancing the two. Why now leave the Gogo Dlamini to fend for herself, to wait for Eskom, who has switched off her lights for another 6 months, whilst the public protector is only, you know, leaving everything to focus on this? Hence, I'm saying a lot of issues are dealt with in the state of capture. It's those few additional issues we've picked up which we are going to deal with. Okay. And the court is going to ventilate further on the issue of the Gupta leaks.
Advocate, thank you so much for coming in. I hope you'll come back.
Okay.